Coming up on Chasing the Natty, ADP in college fantasy creates a lot of discussion surrounding it, and today we're bringing on Justin Leo, aka Volume Pigs, to discuss the nature of ADP and CFF and how it can be best used to make you a better CFF player and drafter. After that, I'll be reacting to some of this past month's biggest ADP risers and fallers. We've got all of that and more coming right after this. This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the offseason at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there to any of our great tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Redraft, Dynasty, Devi, Campus of Canton Leagues, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, everything you need to succeed, including what we'll be talking about, ADP. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and welcome back to the show, Mr. Handsome Fella himself, Mr. Justin Leo at Volume Pigs on Twitter. You guys know him for his wonderful written work. Welcome back, Justin. How are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to be back. You know, it feels like I'm back like I never left. You know, for those who tuned in a few weeks ago, I was on Jared's one of the live drafts. And so I appreciate the compliment. I'm not nearly as handsome as your guest tonight, Eric Froton, who everybody will be seeing. But yeah, it's good to be back, man.
I'm glad I could have you on here. Basically, this kind of organically came about because we kind of started this discussion on ADP during our live show. Obviously, those shows get very hectic sometimes. You're talking about CFF and also talking about your picks in the draft at the same time. So we didn't really get to dive as deep into it as I wanted to, but we started this conversation regarding college ADP and kind of the nature of it in terms of how should it affect your ability to draft and everything like that. So basically, we started talking about it a little bit more on Twitter. You put out a thread about some, you kind of, your thoughts on it while you were on a bike ride, which is the perfect time to think about CFF strategy in general, is just on a bike ride.
Why not, right?
So I figured, why not get you back on here, man? We're going to have a, not really a debate, I would say, because again, we have different views on how to use ADP or like how it should affect you in your drafting, right? But it's a discussion, I would say, more so than anything.
Well, you got to build the suspense, Jared. This is going to be like a heavyweight fight. You know, this is two enemies, two big. You know, this is no. Of course, I'm kidding. Everybody knows. You know, I've been on your show multiple times. So yeah, it's going to be a healthy discussion. You know, and Jared and I are on two different sides of the argument, I suppose. But I mean, at the end of the day, it'll be up to the viewer's discretion. I mean, everybody, it's a hobby. At the end of the day, you want to draft how you want to draft, go for it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll get right into that here in just a second. I will go ahead and get some housekeeping out of the way here. A couple of things to announce to you guys. One, as always, go check out our Defending the Natty series. We had an awesome episode this past month with myself, Nate Marquise. We also brought on Josh Chevalier and Eric Froton to join us. We did a freshman and supplemental mock draft. We went three rounds with that. It was a ton of fun. So if you're getting ready to do your supplemental drafts like myself, I got two of them starting tomorrow morning. It is a perfect way for you to start kind of understanding who are the top players available, how do some of the top supplemental guys compare to the freshmen in the draft, and really it's an incredible list and you should go check it out. In addition to that, We here at the CFF team at Campus Can are hard at work on our CFF guide, and we already have our pre-orders available out there for you guys. It is actually 25% off right now if you pre-order the CFF guide. So if you want to basically have free $5 back, just head on over to campuscan.com and go ahead and pre-order that. We got a lot of great stuff coming to you this year. We got some expanded sections. We redid our team profiles a little bit to incorporate some more stats in there for systems and stuff like that. So I think you guys are going to enjoy that. We expanded the player profiles a little bit, not in terms of the number of players, but we gave our writers a little bit more room to actually kind of dive a little bit deeper into those guys. We have some projections that will, or I can't say that. We are hoping will be available the day the guide is released, but if not, they will be available in the weeks afterwards. So that's going to be probably the most exciting thing that we are adding this year. We also got our own Justice, who is from the G5 Hive. He also does incredible defensive player work, and so he will be adding a wonderful defensive streaming section as well as breaking down defenses for you guys. So very much looking forward to releasing that draft for you. And guess what? It's the same price it's been every year, and you guys get more and more every year. So fantastic stuff. Go check that out. And of course, as always, go check out the rest of the Campus Canton podcast feed. Tons of great stuff out there. That's enough housekeeping for me. Justice, excuse me. I do this every time. Justin, I'll throw it over to you, man. You're doing great work writing at campuscanton.com as well as your own not Substack. Is it Patreon or Substack?
It is a Substack. It's just a custom. So it's just www.volumepigs.com. Your audience probably knows that already. Let me say one thing too. You mentioned those episodes with Nate. I love the Defending the Natty series. I think that's a fantastic series of content. And, you know, when I went on the live stream a week ago, I was joking about Nate being a third grade analyst. Everybody understands, you know, that's a joke. I think Nate's probably my favorite. My other, like, of other content creators in this space, outside of yourself, of course, Jared. Nate, I think, is my favorite CFF content creator. I think he's fantastic. He does a great job. So I love those Defending the Natty episodes that you guys have. He obviously knows what he's doing with Dynasty. You know this in his league. I mean, he's killing it. So, you can find me at volumepigs.com and all the great stuff that Jared just mentioned. There's so much good CFF content right now. It's exciting, right? I think it's good for the game and hoping to grow it even more.
Absolutely. When this game finally does explode into the mainstream minds of people, like, we'll be ready for it. All of us will be. And it's going to be absolutely incredible.
Yep.
So now that we've buttered each other up, Justin, I think it's about time we start tearing each other down now. Obviously, obviously a joke. Again, I might as well kind of provide some context as to kind of how this whole discussion started, right? And really, it was my reaction in our live stream. Well, not just that one, but also the summa cum laude draft to you drafting LJ Martin specifically in those two leagues. Like, both times that caught me off guard. And I believe in the summa cum laude, you took him fifth round. In our live stream, you took him seventh round. And I had made a remark that LJ Martin's ADP wasn't until the 20th round. And so I kind of, in a way, poo-pooed on the pick a little bit, saying like, hey, like, you could have gotten him much later even if you do like him that much, versus you kind of later on kind of thought about it and said, hey, does it really matter? So I guess I'll throw it over to you, Justin, to kind of give your piece on your reaction to the idea of like taking LJ Martin that early. It doesn't even have to be specifically him, but just taking players in general that much earlier.
I was going to say, I'm not here to argue about like a specific player and where I haven't
been. I agree.
Yeah. So, so I will say, I didn't see your reaction on the live stream. I figured though that any commentary would probably, because that's a pick that would have stood out. Fifth round, but that was a specific draft. That was a 14 round draft. So even like, there was no way that you could draft him at his ADP. You could say, take him in the 14th.
Oh, I agree.
But that one was sort of specific. I think, you know, for the draft that maybe is more pertinent is the live stream last Sunday. That's a 30 round draft. It's a little more standard. I believe I took LJ in the ninth round, but again, I want to keep this sort of generalized. So I think when we're talking about using ADP and sort of following that, so a few thoughts, and I'll just detail these out here. I think if you are a new player and you don't really have any sort of level of confidence in your own ability to sort of make an assessment, have your own set of rankings, you don't really know a lot of the players, And if you are reaching in a round, it's because you actually just don't know a lot of these other players. Like you're taking a player like, oh, I know so-and-so, let me draft him here. That's a mistake. And you're going to end up losing a lot of value that way when you could sort of use the ADP calculator and use that as a reference point. If you're somebody who's a little bit more experienced and you sort of, or at least you feel you're pretty confident in sort of knowing the player pool, maybe you have your own set of rankings. You don't necessarily have to be a content creator. You're just an experienced player. You know the other players in the pool. And then when you're reaching, it's not necessarily a question of, because you don't know anybody, you know all of these players, you're deciding that you want to take this other guy ahead of them. Now, this again only hurts you if you're drafting or you're reaching for a player and losing out on players that you still want that are going to be taken in the next few rounds. So let's, you know, again, I don't want to harp too much on the LJ Martin pick, but I'll just use that as an example.
I think it's a good example because it provides kind of a good.
And it's a good touch point specific. Yeah. So let's say it's the ninth round in the draft and it's not a zero sum thing, right? Yeah, it's 30 rounds. So you have a lot of picks, but it is 30 picks. So you have 30 spots on your team. And let's say the ADP of the players, 9, 10, 11, 12, you wouldn't complain if they were on your team, but there's nothing necessarily that separates them to you. So let's say there's 10 players in that range that you view all in the same category. If you miss out on one, it's not a big deal because there's 9 others that you sort of have within that range. And let's say there's another player that you know for sure that you really want, but his ADP is much further down the line, say 15, 16 round or something like that. To me, I have no problem with then taking, you know, deciding like, hey, I know I really want that guy. I know his ADP is later, but I don't want to really use a pick right now on players I know I don't like as much. And ultimately, you know, it comes down to how sort of costly is it to you when you are reaching for a player. If there's a bunch of players in between now and that player's ADP that you want and you know you really want, well, then that doesn't make any sense because you should be taking those players now. But if there isn't really a lot of those players, right, and there's a bunch of players that you like but you don't love, they're sort of not distinguishable to you, I don't really think it's that big of an issue. But I think the first point I made is it is nuanced. Like if you think you're an experienced player and you know what you're doing, that's fine. If you don't know what you're doing and you're just taking players that you recognize and you're reaching and you are probably losing lots of value, I think that's a problem. I would also say, and this is more of, and I think this is something I touched on in the video, with regards to like the accuracy of ADP, I think I have a criticism here, especially earlier on in the offseason. And I think this is, again, a nuanced point. You know, like we're in a best ball draft right now, Jared, with the C2C guys, a bunch of industry guys. In a draft like that, the ADP calculator, I feel, is extremely accurate. Why? Because it's based on a lot of the drafts that these guys are in. These are the guys who are doing these drafts throughout the offseason. I feel like if you're in, for a lot of you, and maybe not necessarily people that are watching at this point in the offseason, but those who are sort of plugging in August and queuing up their leagues, which I believe is a lot of the CFF player base, right? You're not really paying attention most offseason. August is when your draft is, and that's sort of when you come back in. I think the ADP calculator and what you see in your draft, you're going to see some pretty drastic differences. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a draft of a bunch of sort of inexperienced or players, guys who are not really paying attention. My home league draft, which is July 15th, I already know it's going to be very different from what the ADP calculator says, because there's certain guys in there that I know are going to reach for certain players. And so with that in mind, you know, I think especially in the latter stages of the draft, I mean, after the sixth, seventh round, it almost becomes the wild, wild west on a lot of these drafts in my mind. And the ADP calculator might not necessarily be that indicative of what you're going to actually see in your draft. So you have to sort of be mindful of that. Obviously, that's an average, and it gives you sort of a baseline of what to expect. But it's based on sort of a small group of people who are doing the drafts earlier on in the offseason. Like it gets better progressively, right? In July, the ADP data that you have is much better than in March. And March is based off a small amount of drafts. And even worse, the amount of people that are doing those drafts is not very, it's not varied, right? It's a lot of the same people that are doing these drafts. So it's more a mirror of a small group of people's rankings or where they're drafting those players rather than, you know, a real true assessment, you know, because I don't really believe that the market is that efficient earlier on in terms of valuing CFF players, even throughout the offseason, right? I mean, you look at the bust rates, right, compared to NFL drafts. But certainly early on, I think the ADP calculator is not really a great sort of, I guess, reference to really value, to really set the value on a lot of these players. And it's not necessarily indicative of what you're going to see a month from now, 2 months, 3 months down the line. I would use another example. We did, I think, an experts draft. You actually facilitated it, Jerry. It was Jared. It was the one in January.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was like the first mock draft of the offseason, really. I hadn't seen any. And so we did a bunch, right? And that was a league, or that was a draft where there was a set parameters. I think we did 15 picks, and you could only draft, I think it was three running backs.
I think we did not, we did 9 rounds.
9 rounds. Okay, so even smaller, even more restricted. Okay, and so that's a draft where there's a player, Kyle Mnungai. He didn't get drafted. I tried to draft him in the fourth round, if you remember. So he went undrafted in that draft, and I had like highlighted him for the rest of the group because I had drafted them. Then he told me I couldn't because I was already over the max, and then we had to swap out the pick. He went undrafted in that league, in the league full of experts. About a month later, 2 months later, now you're lucky. If you get him in the fourth round, that's a surplus value because now he gets drafted in the third, right? But nothing has really changed with him, right? I mean, Gavin Wimsatt transferred out. Okay, whatever. I mean, the main thing with him was easy schedule. When Rutgers played bad teams last year, he did really well. They're going to play a lot of bad teams this year, so he's probably going to do well. So nothing really changed with him, and yet the value on him in terms of ADP, right? In that draft, if I draft him in the fourth round, that's a reach because he went undrafted. I could have drafted him at nine. But a month later, all of a sudden, if you get him in the fourth round, that's a surplus value based on ADP. So it's a highly volatile early on, and there's all these sort of examples of players that are not valued appropriately, even sort of amongst experts. And so sort of basing decisions on ADP early on in the offseason, especially when it's really in flux, really volatile. And you know it, I mean, if you mention a player on your podcast, or you talk about a player or some quotes from a coach, his ADP could change drastically, right? We've seen this. Nate published an article during our dynasty draft, and like I'd never even heard of this player, Jamal Adine, I think his name was. He gets drafted like an hour later in that draft, right? Like these things are not, it's not a coincidence, right? Like obviously, so the ADP on players, it can be so sensitive to just these small little things. So you have to kind of, I don't know, you have to sort of keep all of these things in mind. And I realize I've ranted for a while here, so let me stop and give you a chance.
No, you're good. I'll be real. It's a little hard to, I'm trying to figure out like where I want to like.
I mentioned a lot of things,
You
so
did mention a lot of things. I think I'll just kind of start at the beginning, right? You kind of talk about my overall view when it comes to ADP, right? And again, sorry to keep bringing up the LJ Martin pick, but I do think it is kind of indicative of my idea, right? Where you drafted him again, I think you said 9th round. I can't remember if it was 7th or 9th round. Regardless, that was like 10 rounds ahead of where he was going in ADP. And you said to me, and I believe you when you say it, but also it's hard. I will admit that it is hard for me in my mind to kind of wrap my head around this. Basically, I said, like, you could, like, even if you did, like, I totally understand, in my opinion, if you're higher on a guy, taking him a couple rounds ahead of ADP, especially if he's a guy that typically goes in like the 20th round, right? Like, things, like, as you mentioned, as you get back towards the back end of a draft, things get much more wild in terms of much more varied in terms of where guys go. So if you're willing to take a guy 3, even 5 rounds ahead of where he normally goes, because you're just that in love with, again, just, sorry to keep using him as an example, but LJ Martin here, like you just love, I could understand taking him in like the 15th round when his ADP is on the 20th round, because, and you can actually see this in my like draft predictor tool online. I'm totally fine if you're just in that in love with him, you want to draft him on the higher end of where he typically goes, right? Because the ADP value is like just straight in the middle, and then there's obviously some variation between where he goes. I don't understand the idea of there being 5 rounds worth of picks, and there's nobody else that you would rather, like, not that you would rather have than LJ Martin. I understand, like, I don't know, what is LJ Martin like in your rankings? May I ask? Do you know that off the top of your head?
I haven't quite high. Yeah. I mean, I could reference him. I don't know like what the specific RB thing is, but I mean, he's pretty high. He's in around the players that typically get drafted in like the fourth or fifth round in a lot of
Okay,
these.
so like RB, let's say 25.
He might be higher than that.
So,
So
but or
because I expect him to see a lot of volume, and he, like it's the name of my publication, right? So let's
yeah,
just
oh
say
for sure.
something, just as an example. Is that
What were you saying?
I'm saying, yeah, like to play with your example, let's just say RB20. I don't know exactly, but hypothetically.
Let's say hypothetically he's RB20. Does your RB21 or 22 or 23 or anything between RB 20 and 30 not go off in those next five rounds? My whole theory here, right, is that I would rather pass on, even though if LJ Martin was at my RB 20 in round 10, right, and I'm looking, or like even round 5, right, because that's where like RB 20 goes off, knowing for a fact that I can get him 5, 10 rounds later, I'm willing to pass on him at that point, even though technically, according to my rankings, he should be the next RB I take, because I know I'm much higher on him than anybody else. Because then that opens the opportunity then for me to possibly get my RB 21 and then my RB 20 later. The whole point of being a good CFF drafter, right, is that you want to build the best team possible. And so I do think you should adhere somewhat to ADP to...
I'm not disagreeing with that. Sorry.
I would say you should adhere somewhat to ADP to try to build that best possible team so that there's a world where you could get two of your... Shoot, there are teams I've had before because I pay attention to ADP and how guys fall in drafts where I can get four of my top 20 RBs without even having to draft four straight RBs in the draft, right? Like, I can get guys as low as the 10th round that I'm like, okay, this guy fell. Now, granted, again, as you kind of mentioned before, me being a voice in the CFF space, I make it very clear which guys I'm high on, and that makes it harder and harder as the season goes on for me to be able to do stuff like that. But then that becomes all the more important for me then to pay attention to ADP and try to find those values where, you know, people aren't paying as much attention to the guys that I like as well. So your thoughts on that?
No, and let me be specific, I guess, about my side of the argument. I'm not saying that you do not use ADP at all. It's a little bit more nuanced in the sense that I think ADP is definitely important. Certainly those first several rounds, I think everybody kind of knows even without looking at the calculator, but certainly in those first, you know, one, two, three rounds, it's almost like you're not drafting. The draft does it for you. You kind of have to take players based on who's just available, right? But the further you get down is where I'm sort of arguing a little bit. And then my next point, okay, so with this player, we said it wasn't going to be about him, but he's just going to keep, but he's a good example. So LJ Martin, right? The reason, like, I didn't even look at his ADP when I drafted him. I just remember when we did our first C2C best ball, and I just looked it up now. So I was expecting to draft him in that one. And Chris Moxley drafted him in the 13th round and just sniped him. And I was like, oh, I don't, is that where he's going? And that's just what's been like in the back of my mind. The point you made as well is a salient one about content creator. And I'm not going to lie to you. I am paranoid when drafting with a lot of the public because I know, because I'm like even more than you, like I'm publishing a lot, right? I mean, you have a show each week, but I'm publishing 3 days a week on different players. They know my thoughts basically on everything. So it's like playing blackjack or poker and everybody knows you're, and you know how it's like as a content creator.
For sure.
Last live stream, they literally were, it was a competition to try to snipe you, right? You know this.
Oh, yeah.
When I am drafting, with that in mind, I know that there, for the players that I like, there has to be a premium paid beyond what the ADP is. And so maybe that is actually a great point, Jared, and maybe a little caveat that, you know, when people are maybe you're watching me draft and wondering if they should do exactly what I'm doing, it's a little different if people know you, right? If you're in a draft, you don't have to be a content creator, but if you're in a draft with a bunch of your friends and they're all like, oh, he's a Virginia Tech fan, he loves Kyren Drones. Okay, you have to draft Kyren Drones above what his ADP is if you want to get him. Now, Jared might say one round. I think that's a little risky. If you really, really want him, I'd say two rounds is probably where you want to go. But it shrinks the higher you go, right?
And that changes throughout the draft, right? As I kind of mentioned before, like that, I would say like if you're in the first couple of rounds, like, yeah, only like a round before he might normally go if you really want a guy. But, and then like as you get past round 10, maybe you're up to three rounds ahead of where he normally goes in ADP. Shoot. I'll be real. If you're in the last 10 rounds of a 30 round draft, I honestly at that point don't really care where you take guys. At that point, you are taking shots on your guys. Now, there are guys obviously I like better than others, and there's other guys that I'd rather not see have their ADP, you know, rise and not be guys that I can just take at the very end of drafts anymore, right? But I think that's also kind of the nuance you have to play with here is like where are these guys going? Because again, that's part of the reason why I focus so much in on LJ Martin was that I'm not talking about a guy that was going 10th round that you took 5th round. All right. Like I could understand that. I guess for me, it was just the fact that you took him like 10, 15 rounds ahead of where he would normally go. And I was trying to figure out the thought process behind that.
Well, look, yeah, I mean, the 14-round draft of Gridiron, I think, is a separate case. Yeah. I'm not going to argue take him in the fifth round. That's obviously like in the regular draft, that's higher probably. But even, you know, for the ninth round and the 30 round draft, I think maybe part of the disagreement is like, I don't think he's getting to the 18th. Like in the draft that I'm in, and again, the one, I think the only draft that I've been in where I didn't get him was that one with Moxley, and it was our first draft with the C2C team. First impressions die hard, and that was the first time I saw it, and I said, okay, Martin goes around then, probably have to draft him around 9-10. Now that might not be true anymore because that was back in, I don't know, February, March, and th things change quickly, like
Oh,
throughout
for
the
sure.
off.
Well,
So it might not,
you just
yeah.
drafted him again in our newest C2C like family best ball, right? And I think you took him, what, 13th round? So
Well, but
you
again, my point at the beginning of this was with you guys, I feel a little more comfortable. We've done multiple drafts too, so
Gotcha.
we all know each other, and I also feel that the ADP calculator is more accurate with us. Or at least I feel not more accurate, but I feel that some level of comfort that it will be accurate with our sort of draft. Because I think a lot of us have been feeding the data in, that goes into it because we do a
Well,
lot of.
actually, this is where I'm actually going to disagree with you a little bit, Justin, because again, I'm not calling you out or anything here. I think it's just a different matter of perspective here, because I am very involved with building our ADP and like build and working with the guys like over at CFF side, working with Ryan Carpenter, who's been, as everybody can see, has been just cranking out best ball after best ball. I run our best balls here. I do the live streams and everything like that. You would actually be very surprised by how, like, what little percentage is of the people in these drafts, like in our ADP, are expert drafts or just contain experts in general, like that, like drafts that would contain, I would say, more than two or three experts in them, right? We only have three C2C family best balls, like that I would consider expert ones. Obviously, the Champion Series has been going on for a while. I would say that makes up like those drafts maybe make up like a fifth at most of our ADP. A lot of it is also Ryan Carpenter, but also like drafts that I run where I actively reach out to the public. I try to get in as many people as possible. And like one of my rules when I run drafts is, and I do my best to adhere to it, is that I don't let people go in back-to-back drafts. Like I did this last year and I did it again this year where I make it a point to where now, obviously, with the live streams, right? I'm drafting every week, so that hurts that a little bit, right? But I'm making it a point to try to bring in as many different people as possible. And I thought about going through all of our drafts and actually counting up the number of people that we've had involved in here. But again, we got 60 plus drafts in our ADP this year, which is absolutely insane, crazy. Now that sounds like nothing compared to the NFL ADP, right? They got like thousands and thousands of drafts every single month that they're building with, but for college fantasy, that's the biggest sample size we've ever had. And we get more and more people who are active, not just in the drafts, but like year round, right? You kind of mentioned before, right? Early on, yes, I would agree with you. Early on, ADP is not nearly as good as ADP that happens later in the summer, but like, I would say we're kind of getting better and better at getting good ADP earlier and earlier. I mean, shoot, I'm looking at it now, we had 12 drafts in March that we could build ADP with. And that was involved with a lot of different people. And so, again, part of this is me, again, defending my own work and defending, like, what I, not, again, this is gonna sound egotistical, but, like, one of the things I made a focus on when I first got started with CTN was building good ADP for CFF. I don't know if any of our listeners remembered 3 years ago, if they've been around since the beginning, but back then I was gathering ADP and I was actually selling it and providing it for the experts to reference. Because again, CFF site had their own, but I was like making it a point to go and get as many drafts as possible to get it in. So I'll admit that part of this is me defending my work and defending like, hey, like we do have pretty solid ADP as best as we can for this community. Obviously, again, it's not the NFL, right? Is not thousands and thousands of drafts that are put into this aggregate for us to work with. But it is, I would say, good enough for the purposes of as of the things I've described here today.
Yeah, no, and I realized that too. I think when we were going back and forth on Twitter, I realized like, yeah, you're probably the best person to debate this with because I believe you're behind or at least understand the mechanics of the ADP. So you see the plumbing. I have an understanding of theoretically how it works, but I have nothing to do, as you know, with the ADP calculator. It's good to know some of the data. I would say, you know, a fifth, even at that, I mean, point taken, it's probably lower than what I'd expect. Still significant. But even with that point in mind, I would still say, when we're doing these drafts, my familiarity with what you guys are going to do in your draft, because we've done quite a few, but also because you guys are content creators, right? Like, I don't need to be in a draft with Kay to know, okay, he likes drones. I know who some of your guys are, right? And Nate as well. So a lot of these guys, who their guys are. So there is a level of that where it's like, okay, I don't think you guys are going to snipe me on Martin, unless it's Moxley. We did it one time, but also in these drafts, we've done it multiple times. So it's like, if I lose Martin, like, we've done multiple best balls and I'm just doing different stuff, right? You saw I took Ricky White in the second. I wouldn't typically do that, but I just thought, we've done multiple of these. Let's just try different stuff and make it a little more interesting. So, but your point is taken, and I didn't mean, or I don't want to come off as someone who's ungrateful about the work that, because obviously you, it's not just you, Ryan, other people who are involved with putting together these best balls. You guys are leading the charge in terms of getting the data. But as a guy who has a math background, the model is only as good as the data that you have, right? The
I agree.
quality. And it's no secret, we need more people to be playing CFF. And I think that's something we can all agree on. And the more and more people who are doing these drafts throughout the offseason, the better it's going to get. I don't think this is a problem where it's like, this is just a problem and nothing is going to happen. I think it's something that just is going to solve itself gradually over time. And even within each offseason, as I said before, it's more so early on that is, I think, problematic versus later on. I think, August and July ADP is definitely better than March and February or whenever it goes live, April and March ADP. So yeah, I mean, I point taken about sort of your ADP. I think it definitely, I would agree, it's getting better. But I think, we're not. I don't think we're there yet in terms of really, sussing out sort of the market efficiencies of CFF throughout the offseason. I think we still, ideally, I think the model is like the NFL, where you just have thousands and thousands of drafts, and then there just shouldn't really be any, one person. It's a double-edged sword, right? Like, it's as content creators, it's kind of an ego boost to be like, oh, I make an article and all of a sudden the ADP changes. You're like, oh, that's great. And you want to be the biggest content creator with huge market share. But on the other side of it, as the player, as somebody who's participating in CFF, I can look at that and say, this is problematic that
I agree.
one article, I'll remove myself, somebody else publishes an article, and all of a sudden this player's value changes. Like, it's so sensitive to this one thing, right? This one person's opinion or one person's article just changes it so drastically. Shouldn't be that impactful, right? And so that to me is sort of a sign that the marketplace is not big enough yet. There's not
I agree.
enough evidence of ideas and people. And so it's a little too concentrated. And I say this as one of the content creators, right? So I'm criticizing, I'm part of the problem, right? So,
Okay,
but I think we're getting there.
I would say it's kind of weird to call it a problem per se, because like you said, all you're doing is just putting your voice out there, right? But again, it comes with the territory of it being kind of a smaller community, right? And that's why part of me is kind of cautionary to people when they do kind of reach for guys. Like, just because you read a guy in an article does not necessarily mean you go and draft them 10 rounds ahead of where they normally go, right? Justin, you write tons of great articles on guys that are, you think are going too late in drafts. Just because I think a guy's too go like you or me think a guy's going too late in drafts does not mean that that is 10 rounds too late. Like me and Ethan did a show a couple weeks ago, right, where we were discussing guys that are going past round 20 that we thought were just going too late. These were probably guys that belonged in that, round 15 range, or probably even higher than that. And then all of a sudden, like I just put together this ADP data comparing May to June, and that is right when we released that show. And guess what? We see a bunch of those guys rise. Shoot, Cam Cook, and I'm going to talk about this later. Cam Cook rose 7 rounds since that show came out. Now, granted, we were not the only show that was talking about him at that time. Obviously, there was a lot of good news coming out about him coming out of the spring, right? And I think even you wrote an article in addition.
Yeah, later on, I think you guys were first, though. Yeah.
But regardless, like, if you're a CFF player who's just listening to this content, right, you think, oh, Jared and Ethan talked about him, Justin talked about him, therefore this guy must be a much surer bet compared to, like, again, you haven't written an article on like AJ Duffy, who's only risen like 2 to 3 rounds in round 20 range, versus Cam Cook's now going in the round 12, 13 range when he was going like round 20, 21 range. Shoot, he's going undrafted in some leagues. So
No, and that's part of it. I mean, like, and you will be able to empathize with this as a content creator. You know, when you write an article and then all of a sudden you see like a few days later the impact and like the player's value has changed so drastically. If you're in a draft, you also kind of feel paranoid as a content creator. You know, Jordan Shipp, for example, you know, in a dynasty league in our draft, I figured I probably wasn't going to get him anymore after that article. You know, and if I wanted them, I probably had to. Well, so that's not a great example because we don't really know what is a reach in that draft. But the overall point I'm making is you can only sort of experience that so many times where you write an article, all of a sudden this player jumps in where they're getting drafted, and now you realize, okay, well, if I want to draft them, they know I wrote about this player. As a content creator, you make that decision that you're probably going to have to pay an even higher premium, right? But that's specific, I think, as a content creator. But that's another sort of caveat, I guess, to consider when drafting. And if you're watching me on Jared's live draft and you're saying, you know, VP is drafting these guys really, really far above their ADP, that means I can do it as well. It's not necessarily, I'm not saying you can't, but it's not necessarily like for like. You got to consider different factors. Do the people in the draft know you? Do you know what you're doing? And I don't mean that derogatory. I just mean like, are you experienced and do you feel confident in producing your own rankings and your own? Do you have a viewpoint or are you just following? There's nothing wrong with that. When you're new, you're going to follow what the content creators are saying. So, you know, if you're following what creators are saying, I would say yes, default to, you know, their rankings, their ADP. That's going to help you. If you're confident in yourself and your own rankings, and you want to reach for players, you know, within reason, I think that's okay. And Jared made the point, and I agree. The further and further you get out from the draft, the more the reach reasonable, the more the interval sort of expands. Sort of I said that sort of in a confusing way, but early on, you know, if you want to reach one round from like fourth to fifth, that's fine. You wouldn't want to go three rounds beyond 15. I mean, it's hard to even consider what is a reach. I mean, if you're taking guys 18 and his ADP is 24, I don't think anybody's going to bat an eye. Nobody really knows at that point, I would say. You know, if you're in a draft of somebody who likes that player a little bit more, you know, they're going to take him in the 17th round when they normally go in the 25th. That happens all the time.
And
So,
going on what I kind of talked about earlier, right? Like if you're trying to build your best team possible, like past round 15, you're looking at like I don't actually let me look at the numbers here off the top of my head. Not off the top of my head, but like round 15, that's your wide receiver 60, 62, right? If you want to reach up and grab your wide receiver like 60 at that point and you want to take him a couple rounds earlier, that's fine. Or if you want to play the ADP game and you're like, okay, like he's not supposed to go for another five rounds, maybe I'll wait a round or two. But then if you miss out on him, you play the ADP game, guess what? It is a game. You're going to lose sometimes. You don't feel as bad down there, right? Because you're like, oh no, I've lost out on my wide receiver 62. My whole draft is ruined now. Like that's very
well,
different than if you're waiting on, you know, like we were talking about earlier, like LJ Martin, you have him as RB20, right? Yeah, maybe he's going. Let me see if I can find it, where he was going in May or
sure.
in June here. Yeah, maybe he's going. His ADP's risen a little bit because we don't have a lot of drafts yet in yet for June. There's a lot of them going right now, but LJ
I've
Martin.
certainly probably done that.
Yeah, his ADP again, 11th round now. Again, was going in like the 18th round last month, right? But like, if you're looking at LJ Martin and he's your RB20. Yeah, I can kind of get you wanting to reach up a little bit more because you just feel that strongly about him versus, you know, later
Oh.
on where if your best options are your wide receiver 45.
No, and again, I'll reiterate the point. I don't believe, I mean, I know his ADP says 18, but the draft that I was in that I didn't get him, he got drafted much higher. And that was my reference point. So,
Oh, I agree. And
in general, I
I for
agree
sure.
with, if there's an ADP player who's 18, you know, anybody who's been in a draft with me, rarely will I reach 9 or 10 rounds on a player. I don't usually do that. But I didn't really, to be honest, I didn't even know LJ Martin's ADP was 18. I was just using that one draft as a reference and saying, well, I value him pretty high. I know he got drafted in the 13th in this round. I'll
And
take him.
that's the value of ADP, right? Because again, like you can get yourself into trouble basing it off of one draft that you've been in before. Because like you said, that's only one data point versus ADP. We're looking at 60 plus rounds down. I'm not arguing against you here at this point. I'm just trying to point out to people like
It's a
that's
valid.
like that's where you can kind of get that's how you can kind of get yourself into trouble, right? Where you if you like a guy, but then you're kind of taking him consistently well above where everybody else is, could end up hurting you value-wise. I will finish this off with this, Justin. to kind of show that I'm also on your side a little bit as well. I know you're running up against the clock here, so I'll try to be quick about this. But CFF Dynasty drafts, right? Supplemental drafts. We don't have ADP for that. And again, we technically have enough to where we could put together like maybe 6-7 drafts and get some kind of ADP, right? But like in that scenario, I would never, ever use ADP as a huge like crutch in terms of where I'm trying to value guys. Because that is a format that is so wild, wild west. There's not a lot of rankings out there. There's not a lot of data out there in terms of where guys go. I mean, shoot, we see it. I mean, Nate published the first two rounds of our supplemental draft in his 24-teamer. I guarantee you that one draft is going to influence a ton about where people want to take guys. And I'm not going to let that happen to me. I'm going to take guys exactly where I value them. And I'm not going to be afraid of, quote unquote, reaching in those drafts, because I don't think you can reach in a draft like that.
I have to say that was one of the funnest drafts I did. And I think it was for that reason, in the sense that it was you drafting the entire way. Like there was no players that you had to take at any round. Whereas in CFF, like there are a set of players you have to take in the first round, basically, more or less. Second round, I'd say it's pretty static as well. So it's not really you drafting at that point as much as you're just executing on sort of what you have to take there, right? You know, Filmoff is available second round. You just have to kind of take it. Some of these players.
It's hard not to take a guy like that.
Yeah, Ollie, Gordon, Ashton, Genty, if you have the first pick, you're not drafting really. It's the draft is already done for you, and you're really just choosing Genty or Gordon is really the only choice you have. But you don't really have much of a choice. I love doing Nate's draft because it was wide open, and it's such a deep player pool that the players you're taking really are your guys. Like it might be the case that you're the only one who's high on this player or maybe who even knows about this player, right? So that always feels a little extra good. And I agree with you. In a format like that, right? I mean, it's sort of the criticism that I had with overall CFF. That one, it's definitely valid. We do not have enough data point or enough context to really leverage some number and have that dictate where you're going to take a player. You're much better served either having your own set of rankings or finding somebody's, well, again, with dynasties, not a lot of rankings out there, but you guys have published some, haven't you?
Yeah, I've published my own dynasty rankings. We're like trying to bribe Nate into publishing his startup rankings. But yeah, mine are the only ones that are readily available, which again, I've already said this before on another show, like is going to make any dynasty startup I do this year absolutely suck because everybody's going to look at my rankings. Everybody's going to be basically
the only one. Yeah, you're the only one who's published. But what's the deal with Nate? I mean, his home dynasty league draft is over now. He's got nothing to fear. It's time to publish the rankings, Nate. All right, we need the info, okay? I think he's going to win his league this year. It's going to be okay, right? So, if he's worried about that, I think that's fine.
All righty, Justin, I know you are up against the clock here, so I want to thank you for coming on here. For those of you who are listening, don't go anywhere. I'm going to come back here in a second here and record a bit of a half solo show, reacting to some of these ADP risers and fallers, just making this whole episode ADP themed here. But Justin, you want to say anything before you get out of here, man?
No, once again, thanks for having me back on. It's always a blast. For the audience, you'll see me hopefully again at some point in the future. I like to joke about this is the A-team, you know, no more third rate analysts like that. Nate Marquise, Froton, you know, who are these people? No, nobody even knows these guys. So got the A-team back on. We had a nice discussion. Always happy to come back on, Jared. And for the audience, yeah, you can find me at volumepicks.com. And I guess I'll see you again soon, Jared.
Appreciate it as always, Justin. All right, guys, we are back and we are solo again. Thank you for Justin for coming on and having that wonderful conversation. I'm sad that he couldn't stick around for the whole show, but, you know, we all have lives and that is how that works. So it's time for a little bit of just you and me time, you guys, the listeners out there. Again, one thing that, again, as I kind of mentioned, one of the big things I wanted to do when I got into CFF and like being a content creator was providing good CFF content or not good ADP content for you guys. And not only was it just for providing good reference for your drafts, right? So if you're somebody who's new, you can have a place to go to and kind of see what's the general value of different players. But what's always fascinating to me is measuring how guys move up and down throughout the offseason. Again, I've been called out by you know, other CFB content creators, not in the CFF space, but just in general, you know, just for, you know, us drafting so early. And, you know, there's so much that changes between January and February and March. And then obviously the spring portal hits and you got spring games, right? And then you got things that change during the summer. Fall camp comes around. God knows there's going to be things that change there, right? Yes, obviously there are going, like, by the time you're getting ready for your real leagues, like your, you know, redraft leagues every year, non-best ball that are, you know, you draft in like early August. If you're wild, then you do it sometime in July, but right, you're like, those leagues you try to postpone as long as possible because you want to get as much information as possible. But man, I love measuring, watching guys go up and down throughout the offseason, having some numerical data to kind of go along with that to really kind of measure what to expect in the future, right? And that's why I like talking about risers, fallers. Again, obviously, Justin and I just talked about, you know, just the value of ADP for college in general. But to me, it's just always fun to see, like, what the general, you know, CFF sphere is thinking about with different guys, right? And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about some risers and fallers from May to June. I wish I could, I honestly wish I did this, like, at least once a month, every month, right? Because then really would kind of help kind of really string the narrative together with some of these guys throughout the entire offseason. I think the last time I did content based around this, I think it was in February and March range, I believe it was. I put out some graphics, and if you're watching on YouTube, you notice that the graphics are extremely similar. I just updated them, obviously, here for February or for May and June rather than February and March. So we got to run through it. Again, I'll try to be pretty quick about this. Again, I know our segment earlier already went about 40 minutes, and so I don't want to go super, super long with this, but you guys know me. I kind of get carried away. I will note a couple of things here, right? With each of these, I will name all five of the top risers and fallers at each of the positions. We will hit all four positions here today: quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. But you'll kind of notice on some of them that, like, just because a guy moved the most does not necessarily mean I'm going to spend the most time on them or I find them the most interesting. And it really kind of goes back to what Justin and I talked about, right? Where a guy can move 3-4 rounds in, like, the round 20-plus range. And, you know, obviously that's cool that they move so much. It's worth talking about a little bit. But that's nothing compared to even, like, a guy in, like, top five rounds suddenly moving up two rounds. Like, to me, that's just way more interesting, right? Because, like, as Justin mentioned, those rounds are relatively set, especially those first kind of 5-6 rounds where, you know, ADP, as Justin kind of said, is almost deciding your draft for you in terms of which players you should be looking at in that range before things kind of get a little bit more wild. So a guy moving, you know, from the 20th round or the 23rd round to the beginning of the 22nd round, as one of the guys here on the screen does here, I'm probably not going to spend too much time on that, versus another one of the guys on the screen here going from 5th round all the way to 3rd round. That's a lot more interesting to me. So we'll go ahead and get started. We'll start with quarterbacks here. Top mover from May to June is Lenora Sellers. He went from about middle of the 17th round to middle of the 15th round, about pretty much a full two rounds. He's the biggest mover among quarterbacks in the top 25 rounds. John Mateer, the quarterback out of Washington State, he is moving up from the end of the 17th round to the beginning of the 16th round, so a little under two rounds there. AJ Duffy moving from end of the 23rd up to the 22nd. Jalen Milroe going from middle, like early mid fifth to now late third, going up about 18 to 19 spots there. And then Josh Hoover, quarterback at TCU, going from beginning of 18th round, now being taken pretty consistently in the middle of the 16th round. A couple of guys, I'm going to hand wave away here, but as Justin and I mentioned, right, I kind of get why they've risen. AJ Duffy, Josh Hoover, those are two guys that a lot of CFF content creators have been kind of talking about quite a bit recently. Again, they were two specific guys that Ethan and I talked about in our CTN episode a couple of weeks back, so I'm not super surprised to see them gonna get that CTN content creator bump right there. So I'm not really gonna spend too much time on them. John Mateer, I do think, is kind of interesting. Obviously, you guys know me, I'm a big John Mateer fan. I do think he will be the starter for Washington State there, but I don't know if it's, I don't think it was me being more confident in the way that I talk about him, or just I think in general people are kind of coming around to the idea that he'll probably end up being the starter. But I do find it very interesting that both John Mateer is rising here, and he's not included on the next graphic here for CFF ADP fallers among quarterbacks, but I have looked, and Zevi Eckhouse, the backup or 1B in that quarterback competition there at Washington State, has fallen in ADP. And so I do find it very interesting that just the entire CFF space in general is starting to become more confident in John Mateer winning that job. Again, if you guys listened to me a long time, I've been very confident that I think Mateer will win that job in the end. But I know CFF content creators like Josh Chevalier, who are very big Eckhouse fans as well, who think that he will probably end up winning that job. So I feel like we as content creators kind of cancel each other out. I just find it interesting that people are getting more and more confident in Mateer there. Lenore Sellers is an interesting one. Again, he's obviously the biggest mover there. 17th round to 15th round. I think people are starting to become a bit more in love with the idea of an uber athletic quarterback going to play for what I expect to be a pretty bad South Carolina team, playing hero ball. It could very well be that I think some people just kind of had him a little bit too low in their rankings, and then, you know, the idea of an uber athletic quarterback playing hero ball just gets a little bit more appealing. Probably moves him up a couple of spots there. But easily the most interesting quarterback here, right, in my opinion, has to be Jalen Milroe. And I think this is really us finally seeing the confidence of Jalen Milroe, not having anybody overtake him, being able to play in that Kalen DeBoer offense for Alabama, really kind of coming to the forefront here, right? For so long, people were talking about, like, oh, is he going to fit into the system? The spring game comes along. He looks really good to start, really kind of falls apart the back end of the half. You can kind of take away from that whatever you want. But basically, people came around to the idea that Milroe is the starter. And I think once you kind of piece that together of Kalen DeBoer, quarterback, playing at Alabama, should be able to dominate most of their competition. He was already a top 20 quarterback last year without playing a game and a half there, and without him being fully unleashed like he was in the final portion of the year in terms of his legs, I think people are really kind of coming along to the idea that Miller is a pretty safe value and is worth kind of reaching up for. Now, I think it is worth debating, like, where should he be long in terms of how should he be closer to those top three guys like Kadon Salter, Byron Brown, Dylan Gabriel, where you're taking them, where he could end up going as high as like the second round there, or should he fall back a little bit, right, to where he was with Jackson Dart, Nico Iamalieva, Garrett Green, KJ Jefferson, Avery Johnson, those guys who are going like the fifth, sixth round there. He's kind of put in that no man's land kind of with Jordan McLeod. And in my opinion, I like Jalen Milroe, but that's kind of makes it a really weird spot. Like, I do think a lot of people have to kind of start deciding which tier he belongs in, because I don't think Milroe McLeod, it makes sense for them to be in a tier of their own. So that's kind of my thoughts on the ADP risers for quarterbacks. We'll go ahead and move on to the fallers here. Our biggest fallers from Maine to June are at the top here. We got Malachi Nelson going from the middle of the 14th round down to the end of the 18th round. A big drop there, 49 picks. Woof. Next up, you got TJ Finley there at Western Kentucky going from end of the 15th round down to the end of the 18th round, basically a full three-round drop. Miller Moss going from 10-10, so end of the 10th round there, going to the end of the 12th round, so about a two-round drop there. Riley Leonard going from the end of the 13th round down to the end of the middle late of the 15th round. And then Noah Fifita going from the mid to late 9th round down to the end of the 10th round. So about 15 pick drop there. Not a huge, huge drop there for Noah Fifita. Couple of interesting ones here, right? Malachi Nelson, man. He was definitely one that I think a lot of us, and myself included, kind of got a little bit out over our skis with him going to Boise State, right? Like, again, it's appealing. You got a former five-star quarterback that Lincoln Riley at one point chose to be his next guy up. You would think that makes him a shoe-in terms of the type of skill set that you want to see. He's going down to the G5. You're wondering, like, okay, big fish, small pond. This is going to be great. I do think that people are starting to have this idea creep into their minds of, well, we don't really know how much of a rusher Nelson's going to be. Is Boise State really going to throw that much, considering they have one of the best backfields in the G5? When you got Ashton Giunti back there, you got John Bray Dubar, you got two freshmen coming in, Dylan Riley and obviously Sire Gaines, that are both really good backs. Like, they don't have any reason not to run the ball 40, 50 times every single game. And so it kind of made people, I think, realize that, like, Nelson's kind of a fun pick idea, but, like, man, like, I don't think it's really worth taking him in the middle of the 14th round here, right? So, like, middle of the 14th in current ADP, that puts you at QB 32. That would make Malachi Nelson your third quarterback off the board. I really don't think people are really willing to stomach that. He's currently now going down at, let's see if I can find him real quick, to 11.5. There he goes, QB 42. Fourth quarterback on the board, I think people can stomach that a little bit more, but I'll be real. Like, I've seen a recent draft where Malachi Nelson lasted until the 30th round. I fully expect his ADP to continue to drop. I think the profile here is quickly, people are realizing, is one that could easily turn into a bust at quarterback for CFF purposes. If Boise State just runs the ball a ton, they just make Malachi Nelson that game manager quarterback that really is poison for CFF. TJ Finley's kind of an interesting one, because I just kind of, from general vibes of the CFF sphere, I thought people were kind of becoming more confident in the fact that Finley would be the starter for Western Kentucky. So I thought that would correlate with a rise in his ADP here, but apparently not. Again, a full three-round drop here from the 15th round to the 18th round. I just wonder if people in general are backing off on Western Kentucky in general, right? And that's what is pretty much what I am seeing, right? Easton Messer, that's a guy that was being taken as early as the 5th, 6th, 7th round earlier in the season. His ADP this past month, 18.02. He was already a pretty steep dropper early on in the offseason. His ADP just continues to drop from there. And that's a guy playing in the slot position for that offense. Easily one of the most lucrative places. I think people are just a little Western Kentucky'd out because the offense has just never been as dynamic as it was back when Zach Kittley was offensive coordinator. Now, obviously, Ben Arbuckle was great last year, not as great, but obviously Malachi Corley was still a top 15 wide receiver. So it surprises me a little bit to see people backing off Western Kentucky just as much as they are. Like, even Dalvin Smith, right? I was kind of thinking about this the other day, where, like, Dalvin Smith, we'll talk about here, huge ADP drop this past month because of, for obvious reasons, with his positional eligibility. But even still, like, as a wide receiver, like, if you expect Dalvin Smith to be the wide receiver one for this Western Kentucky offense, like, they're not going to all of a sudden start running the ball 20, 30, 40 times a game, right? They're still going to mostly try to pass the ball a good amount here. And Finley should be pretty fine at a CUSA level. I know, like, some people don't love him as a prospect, but I think he'll be good enough to get Messer and Smith the ball. And, like, all these guys are seeing pretty decent drops in ADP right now. And so, I don't know. I just find it interesting. I totally get the Miller Moss drop. You guys know I had Miller Moss as high as QB 12 earlier this year. I still have him pretty high in my rankings. But, man, again, just that thought, that spring game performance really just kind of is hanging over everything right now. He was going high because of how great that bowl game was. We really kind of got brought back down to earth there with the spring game. Jaden Maiava also, you know, had some up and downs in the spring game, but overall looked pretty good. It really kind of creeped back into the minds of people of, like, does Miller Moss actually hold on to this job, right? And especially with the tough schedule that USC has to start the year. Like, who's to say if Riley isn't super committed to Moss that he just drops Moss after week 3. Maiava comes in, Maiava looks good, boom. Suddenly you're a guy that you're taking first or second off the board for a quarterback. Not so great anymore, even though it is a Lincoln Riley quarterback. So I get that drop a little bit. Again, 12th round, I'm feeling it. I've been drafting actually quite a bit recently, because by the time the 13th round rolls around, I'm usually going for my fourth quarterback, and Miller Moss is my fourth quarterback. Like, I'll take the upside of a potential Lincoln Riley quarterback all day long. Riley Leonard's another one I kind of get, right? The Mike Denbrock offense is excellent for dual threat quarterbacks, but man, these health concerns are really, really kind of starting to pile up with Riley Leonard. In my opinion, kind of, obviously it's not quite the same because Cam Rising like tore his ACL and everything like that, but I'm kind of getting similar vibes of like hearing, you know, oh, he's going to be ready for the fall. Oh, he's going to be ready for the fall. And then I wouldn't be surprised if we somebody get to the fall and they're like, oh, he's not practicing right now, but he'll be ready for week one. He'll be ready for week one. And then we get to week one, the days leading up to the final game. And it's like, is he actually going to play? And then at that point, you're wondering like, is he ever going to play? Because like these injuries sound like they're a little bit worse than they were kind of letting on. So I get that a little bit. If we knew that Riley Leonard was going to be healthy, he probably would be a guy that'd be taken in, I would say, probably in the 6th, 7th round. But for right now, I totally get the injury concerns. Again, it's something I don't really want to play around with too much moving forward. Noah Fifita, again, we talked about him earlier this offseason. I thought he's a guy that was going too high earlier in the offseason. I think his ADP has definitely mellowed out a little bit since then, because he's going as high as like the 5th, 6th round, going along with guys like, you know, your Avery Johnsons, Garrett Greens, and stuff like that. And I was like, that's not good value for Noah Fifita. But now down there in the 10th round, you're looking at, what is this, like QB 20, 24 range? Yeah, that's perfectly fine for Noah Fifita for me. So that's my thoughts on the falling quarterbacks here. Let's go ahead and look at some running backs. Running backs are top movers for the month of May to between the month of May and June. Cameron Cook, Parker Jenkins, Reuben Owens, Ricky Hunt, and Corey Kiner. Cameron Cook having a huge, huge jump this past month. He was going in the middle of the 19th round in May. All of a sudden, he has hopped up to round 12, like mid to early round 12, a full 7 rounds there. 86 picks change within a single month. That's absolutely crazy. Parker Jenkins, another one with a pretty sizable jump here. 1805 was his 208.8 was the ADP in May. That puts him in the middle of the 18th round. And then he's now jumped up to the mid to early 14th round there. So that's a pretty big jump there. Reuben Owens, another guy that we talked about a couple weeks ago with myself and Ethan, of guys that were going past round 20. They're probably going too late. He's seen himself a pretty decent jump from early 20th round to late 16th round. Ricky Hunt, seen himself a pretty decent jump here from the mid to late 12th round to now mid to late 9th round. So that's about a 3-round jump right there. And then Corey Kiner, going from middle of the 13th round to middle of the 10th round there. So all of these guys seeing multiple round jumps here. And again, we're not talking about guys that are going like, you know, round 20 plus here for the most part. We're talking about guys that are like already kind of in that middle tier. And I think the reason why we're seeing so much ADP change in that middle tier is that, as Justin and I kind of discussed, right, the first like 5-6 rounds are pretty set in stone. People have a pretty good idea of like round like 6 through 10 for the most part. But in terms of where the CFF community is kind of falling in these 11 to 15 range, that's kind of getting solidified right now in terms of who actually belongs in that next tier as people get deeper and deeper into their research, and they're realizing that there are some guys that probably were falling through the cracks that probably should be going earlier. And I think absolutely pretty much every one of these guys here fall into that category. Cook being obviously the most extreme example here. This was a team that I think people kind of knew that TCU was going to have another running back that we would be interested in, right? I mean, think of your Kendre Millers, think of your Imani Bailey's last year. Like, TCU has been good to us. And I don't think people were really fully ready to buy into Trey Sanders. And so the moment we heard that Cameron Cook, a freshman that I know a lot of guys liked last year, was set to take over as the main guy here, value went up. A lot of us started talking about him right around the same time. Again, I'm always a little queasy when I see a guy jump up 7 rounds like that, because I have not been able to grab him in drafts recently. I definitely miss his old value there in the 19th round, but you know, it's part of the gig. And you get pretty much all these guys fall into the same category here between Parker Jenkins. Again, people are kind of buying into him kind of being the bell cow there at Houston. I do think people do, and I say this as somebody who does like Parker Jenkins, has drafted a ton of him. We do need to be a little cautious about, you know, Stacey Sneed still being there technically. Corey Kiner there at Cincinnati, I think, is another one that people were like, hey, why is this guy falling to the 15th round? He's a pretty safe value for the most part. Like, Cincinnati's going to run the ball quite a bit. He's going to be the main guy. Let's slowly move him up here a couple of rounds. Ruben Owens was the guy we talked about a couple weeks ago. I'm not surprised to see him get a bump out of that episode. But yeah, other than that, again, there's not really that much to talk about with the running backs outside of Cameron Cook. Again, that's just a huge, huge jump between May and June. And really, that's just something to note that if you're a Cameron Cook fan before, his value is basically, I don't want to say gone, because I still think he's a really good pick there, even in the 12th round. But for the most part, like, he's not the steal that he once was. We'll look at some following running backs here, and there's some kind of interesting names here, but also not really that much to talk about, because again, when it came to the followers, right, I mostly focused on guys who were going in top 15 rounds. And because I did that, again, it really kind of, how do I say this? It really kind of limited exactly how far some of these guys would fall, right? Because like our fifth place guy here on this list only fell one round. And I'll be real, like, that's when you're talking about the difference between round 8 and 9, you're not really talking about that much of a difference. Like I said, like, that's a tier that started to get pretty solidified over the last month for CFF drafters, but one round difference is not really that great. Justin Marshall at Colorado State, again, he's dropping two rounds there, like mid to late 13th round to mid to late 15th round. Again, not much there. I'm not a big Justin Marshall fan. I think that people who are drafting him are assuming, despite the fact that they have all of their top rushers returning from last year, that he's going to somehow start getting a bell cow role in an offense that we don't really see a bell cow role very often. So I don't really like the pick in general, but I think that kind of drives him dropping there a little bit. But also at the same time, like, two rounds from 13th to 15th round as a drop, it's not super crazy. Jamal Haynes there, he's going from, in May, he was going to end of the 8th round. Now he's going kind of mid to late 10th round. So about a 2-round drop there for him. I think this is kind of a delayed reaction that basically Haynes King got over the last couple of months, where Haynes King was initially a guy that people were drafting in like the top 2 to 3 rounds, where he's now going, let me see, Haynes King, I just saw him. Yeah, Haynes King's going like the 6th round now. So Haynes King kind of got that huge drop from the Georgia Tech schedule realization that a lot of people had. I think Haynes is starting to kind of get that a little bit more delayed now. Nathan Carter dropping about a round and a half here, 14th round to 15th round, or kind of mid 14th round to late 15th round. I don't get the drop because I actually think he's a pretty good solid value here, but again, it's a round and a half. There's not really much to say. Quinshon Judkins dropped about a round here from late 3rd round to late 4th round. I think people are starting to understand that there's not a huge difference between Judkins and Trayvon Henderson. There's a almost potentially greater than 50% chance that Henderson, despite Judkins coming in, is still probably the lead back at Ohio State. And so people are kind of backing off Judkins maybe a little bit, but who knows. And then Joquavius Marks, you'll see this theme, kind of like how I talked about with West Kentucky, where I think just in general, people are backing off of that Western Kentucky offense. I think the same thing's happening here with USC, right? Because you'll see, obviously, we saw Miller Moss drop here. Joquavius Marks is one of our biggest followers at running back, one of the USC wide receivers. Spoiler alert, will be one of our biggest followers at wide receiver. And so I think just in general, the CFF community is kind of backing off that offense a little bit, thinking that it's not going to be quite the Lincoln Riley offenses we've seen the last couple of years. So we'll see. Let's talk about some risers at wide receiver here. And this, to me, is probably one of the most interesting groups right here. You got Camden Benjamin, the wide receiver out of Tulsa, rising from mid-17th round to kind of mid to late 13th round there. So almost 4 rounds worth of ADP increase there. Jordan Moore, the wide receiver out of Duke, going from late 12th round to now kind of mid to late 9th round, so about 3 rounds for him there. Christian McCray, the Kent State wide receiver there, coming back from injury, early 15th round, now going early 12th, early mid 12th round, excuse me. Trayvon Rudolph, wide receiver out of NIU, going from the mid to early 24th round up to the 21st round there. Again, I'm not impressed. That's not super noteworthy to me. I do think Rudolph is still probably a value in a lot of drafts, but in terms of just the actual movement of him in ADP, I'm glad to see he's going up, but I don't think three rounds is like anything to write home about too much. It kind of same thing with Chris Bell, right? I thought we'd actually see Chris Bell start rising a little bit more in drafts, but it seems that things have mellowed out a little bit there, thankfully. But he was going early 22nd round. Now he's kind of going mid 19th round. You know, that's a pretty solid place to pick up the potential Louisville wide receiver one, in my opinion. But really, the top three guys, Camden Benjamin, Jordan Bohr, and Christian McCray, are the interesting ones because of just how high they're now going, right? Moore making it into the top 10 rounds. Christian McCray, that's a dude that you could have, I'd have to see what McCray's ADP was in April. Actually, I can probably look that up real quick. But this was a dude that, like, a lot of people, and myself included, just straight up forgot about. Like, he was a guy that was going undrafted in some circles. Let's see. Yes, his ADP in February was 301.4. So you're talking like round 25. That moved up again, roughly round 25 in March. That moved up about 20 spots in April. He moved up about 100 spots between April and May. That's when really everybody kind of realized that's when everybody had the big realization of like, oh crap, this dude that had 12 targets per game before he got hurt is coming back. And that just kind of kept going from there. He rose another 35 spots this month. I'll be real, by the time we put in more June drafts, I wouldn't be surprised if he jumps up even a little bit more than this. But again, the kind of common theme here between Camden Benjamin at Tulsa, Jordan Moore at Duke, and Kent State is, again, that what I was talking about earlier with some of those running backs in this range of, we're looking at a lot of teams here that we weren't really looking a ton at between Tulsa, Duke, Kent State. What you're doing, your CFF analysis early on in the season, these are not teams you're really looking at. But now that we've kind of got a pretty good handle on a lot of the teams we wanted to look at already, we're kind of digging a little bit deeper, looking at some of these teams that could have some value coming out of them. And we realize there's some good value with Camden Benjamin. There's some good value with Jordan Moore, with Christian McCray. And they should be rising in drafts, right? Like, this makes all the sense in the world. That there's no reason for these guys to be staying round 15 plus. So that's my kind of thoughts on the ADP risers for wide receivers. So let's go take a look at some of the followers here. Very similar. The top one's very obvious, right? Dalvin Smith, wide receiver out of West Kentucky. Everything to do with the fact that he loses his tight end eligibility on Fantrax. He went from the 6th round down to the 13th round. You're talking about a full 7-round drop there. And again, I get it. I do find it interesting, though, that even though he is dropping, he's still the number one wide receiver taken for West Kentucky, which, again, I just find interesting. And then the next, I would say all four of the next four guys really are in the same boat, with the exception of maybe the last guy. But Carnell Tate, wide receiver at Ohio State, going from late 14th round down to the middle of the 19th round. His fall just continues more and more and more. Chris Brazell, the wide receiver out of Tennessee. I know Josh Avaya likes him quite a bit, but he's seeing a drop here from middle of the 15th round down to the middle of the 19th round. So about 4 rounds of ADP drop there. And then CJ Daniels, the wide receiver out of LSU, used to be a guy that was going in the 5th, 6th round, dropping all the way down to an ADP of mid to late 15th round now. He was mid to early 12th round last month. He's been all, like, between Tate and Daniels, both of them have been just guys that have seen their ADP drop and drop and drop as the month goes. And that really goes for our last guy here as well, Zachariah Branch, the wide receiver out of USC, going from early to mid 11th round down to the late 13th round here. So much of these guys, Tate, Brazell, CJ Daniels, it really kind of comes down to spring news that kind of indicate they're probably not the guys we want. Obviously, us taking a look at these coaching systems a little bit more, kind of realizing like, they don't really necessarily, or like maybe this isn't going to be as beneficial for wide receiver twos in general. as we thought, like, again, looking at all these guys, like between Tate, Brazil, and CJ Daniels, these were all guys we expect to be at best wide receiver two. And all three of those guys are now caught in situations where, again, one, we're kind of realizing like, maybe it's not as good for the wide receiver two as we thought it might be, especially in the case of Ohio State and Tennessee a little bit. But also, again, they have competition for that wide receiver two spot. Like at Ohio State, Connor Tate, he's going up against Jeremiah Smith, right? Like, Jeremiah Smith, right? There's questions there as to whether or not he'll be the next guy up there. Obviously, Brandon Innes technically still in the mix there. Chris Brazell at Tennessee, right? Yeah, squirrel wise, probably the number one guy, but Brew McCoy comes back. Dante Thornton still hanging around. As much as I like Brazell, like, there is some questions of whether or not he'll actually be that number two guy. That explains the drop there. And then CJ Daniels, probably the clearest one here. So many of us assumed that he was going to go in there and he would fit that Brian Thomas role. He would be a starter early on. He's been running with the twos, and it's been guys like Kyron Lacy and Xavion Thomas, right? Aaron Anderson, Chris Hilton, guys that have been at LSU for a bit who are actually, or at least played in the SEC. They're the ones kind of getting that start, and CJ Daniels is kind of stuck in that second team there. And so he's seeing himself a big drop there. And then Zachariah Branch, people like betting on talent, but I think people quickly realized that he was a guy that couldn't stay going as high as he was, right? He was a guy that was initially, let me see if I can find his ADP. Like, he was a guy that some would take as, yeah, looking at it here, going, his ADP in March was 74.1, which if I'm doing the math correctly, puts him in the seventh round on average, right? You're now looking at him going in the 13th round. So basically he's doubled the number of picks that he lasts in the draft since then. And that really has to do with one, not a super impressive spring by most accounts, which is kind of crazy because he looked like he was set to build greatly off of what he's able to do freshman year. But also, too, guys like Jacoby Lane, guys like Deuce Robinson, people kind of remembering, like, all these guys. USC's, or Mekhi Lemon as well. USC's got a ton of guys to throw to, and Lincoln Riley wide receivers outside of CeeDee Lamb just have not been what we really want them to be for CFF. So between those two things, that kind of explains why Zachariah Branch continues to fall in drafts. I'm actually very curious to see exactly how far in drafts he will fall by the end of the offseason here. That's my thoughts on the wide receivers that have fallen. We'll go through the tight ends pretty quickly here. Probably the top five here, risers among tight ends. Nick Harbor, the wide receiver tight end hybrid out of South Carolina, going from late 20th round to now the mid to late 13th round. So a huge jump there for Nick Harbor. Sam Brush out of Stanford, going from middle of the 23rd round to the mid to late 21st round. I'll be real. The only guy I'm really going to dive into deep here is Nick Harbor, because every one of these other guys, they rise like a round in ADP, and it's just not really worth talking about. But Drake Dabney rises around from the 20th to the 19th round. Jack Velling, the Michigan State tight end transfer from Oregon State, he rises from the 16th round to the 15th round. And then Tanner Cozio, the Ball State tight end, they're going from 19th round to the 18th round. Again, between Roche, Dabney, Velling, and Cozio, none of those ADP rises are really worth talking about, because that's all pretty standard variance within that range. But Nick Harbor jumping seven rounds is worth talking about here. And I really think it kind of boils down to people rethinking that South Carolina offense, kind of similar to how they were kind of feeling with Lenora Sellers. They're like, okay, our opinion of Lenora Sellers is rising now, right? Who the hell is he throwing to? It's a legitimate question, right? Because, again, Antoine Wells, off to Ole Miss. You have, oh my God, why am I forgetting his name off the top of my head? He was incredible last year. My God. Xavier Leggett, excuse me. Yeah, Xavier Leggett going off to the draft, right? And there does not seem to be a really solid answer behind them at who's going to take over at wide receiver, right? South Carolina brought in a ton of transfers, tons and tons of transfers. They were just sucking up guys left and right. And, you know, there's your Jared Brown fans, right? There's your different guys and everything. But the most intriguing, in my opinion, is Nick Harbor because of that tight end eligibility. He's a big body dude. He plays on the outside well, which is typically where South Carolina likes to have their most productive receivers. Now, again, Harbor obviously has some limitations given his size that he can't move quite as quick as like a Xavier Leggett, right? Like Xavier Leggett had a sub 4 40 time, right? The dude was freakishly fast for how big he was. But also Harbor technically does train for the Olympics. Obviously he did not end up making it this year, but you know, he does train for them, so he's a pretty fast dude in general. I think people are kind of getting very intrigued by the idea of Nick Harbor potentially being the wide receiver one at South Carolina, which has been very lucrative for us over the last couple of years, and getting that tight end eligibility to go along with it, because that could actually be an absolute game breaker. Even if they do spread the ball around a lot, right? Like, a lot of us fully expect Harbor to be a starter for South Carolina, right? And even if they spread the ball around and you're looking at 650 yards for their wide receiver one, which is obviously atrocious for a wide receiver, but for a tight end, that's pretty dang solid regardless. So I think people are realizing that Harper's pretty, I would say, safe value actually at tight end, so long as he actually starts for the Gamecocks. So that explains that huge jump in ADP there. Last but not least, we'll talk about the fallers in terms of the tight ends. Again, not really a ton to look at here, because again, Tyler Warren, Mason Taylor, Jake Brenningstuhl, these are all guys that have dropped like around and a half. Like, they're pretty much still going in the same tier. None of these guys really dropped tiers per se. Even Caden Prescorn, who dropped 33 picks going from the 1209 there down to the 1507. So you're looking at, again, a 3-round drop there. This is that tier of tight ends to where if you miss out on the top guys, like, there's still some pretty good value in this range that you can grab, and none of them really are leaving this range, so not really that much to talk about. Probably the most surprising is, again, that continued fall for Benjamin Urosek. Again, he's going from a May ADP of middle of the 14th round, now he's going end of the 17th round, so about a round and a half difference there, or excuse me, 3.5 round difference there between May and June. And like, he was going, let me see if I can find his ADP from earlier this offseason. Yeah, in February, when he first transferred to Georgia, people were taking him in the round like 10, 11 range. Now he's falling to the round 17 range. I think people are kind of backing off on the fact that, you know, he wasn't there during the spring. Technically, he came in late, but he didn't actually work with the team or anything like that. Oscar Delp, like, he's still going to be probably the number one tight end, even though Urosek's probably a better receiver than him. And also, I think people are kind of coming around to the idea that, you know, Brock Bowers is Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is incredible. Nobody should be expected to repeat what Brock Bowers did. Now, granted, you don't have to repeat what Brock Bowers did to be a solid CFF tight end, but add in the fact that Oscar Delp will be taking some of those snaps, will be taking some of those targets. I can understand certainly why Urosek is falling. That pretty much brings me to the end of the show here. Again, I'm glad you guys stuck around for just my musings on the different fallers and risers in ADP over the last month or so here. Again, a lot of interesting guys here. I'll probably post these on Twitter as the week goes along for you guys to react to yourselves. But with that, we have come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you have not already, go ahead and leave the like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on YouTube. And if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave the 5-star review wherever you can, and make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus Camp Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy games. We'll see you guys back here next Monday when we'll have more stuff to talk about. Until then, I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and I'll see you guys next time.